Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, let's just jump right into it today. We didn't really talk about box office stuff at all yesterday because I talked about the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival. So let's kick things off with some box office discussion here. Why don't you run through the top 10 movies at the domestic box office this past weekend for me?
Will do. There was a lot of negativity coming from these episodes earlier in the year, and I am pleased to report that this is, no kidding, one of the most encouraging weekends I have seen at the box office since the pandemic began.
Hey, all right. I like to hear that.
We'll talk a little bit more about that why in a second. But at number one, we had Ryan Coogler's Sinners repeating with $45.7 million, a mere 5% drop from its opening weekend. That is one of the best holds ever for a wide release movie without caveat. It is incredible. We will talk more about that in a second. At number two, it is not 2005, but Star Wars Revenge of the Sith back in the top 10 with $25.4 million for its 20th anniversary re-release, ranking as one of the biggest opening weekends for a re-release of a movie ever. At number three, we had The Accountant 2, a new release this weekend, which made $24.5 million on its opening weekend domestically, essentially matching the original. We will talk just a touch more about that in a minute as well. At number four, we had a Minecraft movie holding very strong with $22.7 million in its fourth weekend. That movie has now crossed the $800 million mark worldwide, and it's going to be close, but it still has a shot at touching a billion. Crazy stuff there. Number five, we had another newcomer in the form of Until Dawn, which is based on the video game of the same name. Didn't light up the charts here, but did $8 million. The good news there is that it only has a $15 million budget, which I was very pleased to learn, and that it also did a little over $10 million overseas, so it's actually overperforming overseas, which is a bit rare for a horror movie like this, so it should still be okay. So kind of a low-key win for Sony there. Number six, The King of Kings, that animated Oscar Isaac Jesus movie, dropped like a rock, but obviously after Easter it was supposed to, but that made another $4.2 million. That movie has made almost $55 million domestically. That is kind of a sly little hit here. At number seven, we have The Amateur, the new Rami Malek actioner that's been doing okay the past few weekends, made another $3.6 million, and again, in another low-key good things for the box office, that movie has made over $80 million worldwide. At number eight, we had A24's Warfare with another $2.6 million. That one's struggling a little bit to kind of get where A24 kind of wanted it to be, but I just learned today that it only had, I believe, a $20 million budget. I thought it was much higher, so that's kind of cool. Number nine, this is an interesting one. Pink Floyd Live at Pompeii. This was a re-release of a concert film. Pink Floyd made $2.6 million on just 678 screens, and those were pretty much limited to like one showing a day. So the per screen average there was actually really, really good. So that was kind of interesting. And at number 10, we have The Legend of Ochi, which is a new fantasy movie from A24, made just $1.4 million after expanding onto over 1,100 screens. So its per screen average is okay, but it didn't really find its audience in expansion here. So, you know, not so great. A24 is having a bit of a rough year, honestly, but That's the top 10. That's where we're at.
Okay. Well, I guess let's circle back to Sinners, because that's a really impressive feat that this movie accomplished in terms of that drop you're talking about.
Yeah. So, It has now made $123.2 million domestically and $40 million internationally for $163.2 million running global total. Now, last week we talked about how it was lagging a little bit overseas. What's interesting is that all of this buzz led to better overseas box office as well. It essentially dropped 0% in the UK. And apparently, like, other markets are adding screenings because they're catching on to how big the buzz is. So this is not just online buzz. This is translating into real-world action on the part of both moviegoers and theaters around the globe. So, I mean, at this point, the absolute floor for this movie is probably about $300 million worldwide, which is kind of what we were like, oh man, can this get to 300 worldwide and break even? Well, now it's definitely going to at least do that. If all goes extremely well, we could be looking at $400 million worldwide and a very likely award season campaign. So you could be looking at a completely original horror movie with some Oscar nominations and $400 million worldwide at some point, in a best case scenario, which is absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, and again, that 5% drop, there's only a couple movies ever that opened to more than $40 million that dropped less. One was James Cameron's Avatar. The other was Shrek. That is pretty good company to be in. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also I learned this yesterday. This is about to become the highest grossing live action original movie domestically since Gravity here in the coming weeks, which is
what?
Yes, which is, I didn't even consider that. It's also going to be the highest grossing original movie since Pixar's Coco, I believe, in general, which, you know, that was a gargantuan global hit. But yeah, original movies just have not caught on. And so, you know, it's about to pass Jordan Peele's Nope and Smile, I believe, here in the coming days, depending on where things shake out. There's a big difference between domestic and international here, because obviously this movie is very domestic weighted. But yeah, in terms of domestic original releases, this is going to be one of the biggest ones in probably close to a decade by the end of it.
Man, yeah, because Gravity came out in what, 2013 or something? That's over 10 years ago. That's insane.
Yeah, let me look at Gravity real quick. But yeah, I didn't realize that, and it was pointed out to me by my friend Jeremy Fooster, who works at The Wrap. Yeah, absolutely bananas. So, yeah, Gravity came out in 2013, made $274 million domestically. Yeah, so, I mean, it might, whether or not it gets to 274, it will be the biggest sense, but it could, under a best case scenario, match that number.
Yeah.
Or close to it. So, I mean, just to put some added perspective to how crazy this is.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess the question, I'm just curious, because I feel like I've seen a lot of people say, like, you know, this cements Ryan Coogler as a true auteur to watch, you know, somebody in the same or like approaching the air of Christopher Nolan in terms of like his name means something. Are you on board with that, that crown being bestowed after Sinners? Like, do you think that after all the stuff that he's done, he's only made 5 movies at this point, and for Sinners to be his 5th movie, do you think that he deserves to be talked about in those terms?
All right, let me pull up a comparison for you, just to kind of sort of put a bow on what it is that you're asking, because there are very few directors working today that fall into the camp that you're asking about, which is like Quentin Tarantino, where his name alone will get people into theaters. Christopher Nolan, his name alone will get people into theaters. I believe Greta Gerwig could be falling into that category, because you have to even look at, like, before Barbie, you know, Little Women, Lady Bird, like, there, she had the, you know, she was getting people out. So, mm-hmm. I think that that's fair. Okay. But let's talk about Nolan for just a second. I'm going to skip Following, because that was such a small movie that it hardly, mm-hmm. I don't want to discount his film art, but then let's look at Christopher Nolan's 5 movies after that. Memento, Insomnia, Batman Begins, The Prestige, The Dark Knight. So then you have a couple of big studio blockbusters in there. You have a remake, and then you have a couple of originals that did good business, but maybe not like eye-shattering business. Okay, what does Coogler have? He's got Black Panther. He's got Black Panther Wakanda Forever, ergo the comic book stuff. Then you have Creed. Then you have Fruitvale Station, and now you have Sinners. I'd say, pound for pound, that 5-film lineup matches up extremely well against Nolan's. Mm-hmm. And I would also posit that Creed is the thing that out of all of those movies, because I think Black Panther was going to be a guaranteed hit pretty much no matter who took it, but not to the level that he made it. Mm-hmm. There's no question Coogler made that movie maybe twice as big of a hit as it could have been. But Creed, you did not put the Rocky name in that title. Did not have the franchise branding. You were relying completely on the name of Apollo Creed and the star power of Michael B. Jordan and the sheer take that Ryan Coogler had for that movie to bravely ditch the Rocky name. And that turned into a gigantic franchise on its own. So,
well, I mean, to be completely fair, Stallone did get, I think, an Oscar nomination for that role.
No, he didn't. Right? Like, but I'm saying that the name alone, what I'm saying is just pure like name. And yes, but again, Stallone, all the years playing that, like Ryan Coogler's direction netted Stallone an Oscar nomination.
Mm-hmm.
So all I'm getting at is all of what I'm saying is that if you pound for pound look at his filmography versus the other people you're talking about, he's 100% in that category. There's no to me, not putting him in that camp now. This second weekend here, we had a little bit of doubts after the first, like, hey, who knows? You know, hopefully it can hold on and get to where it needs to go. No. After the second weekend, all of those doubts need to be wiped away. Coogler's name deserves to be in that camp, and whatever he wants to do next, anybody would be stupid not to pay for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that was a devil's advocate question because I firmly believe that he's supposed to be in there. I'm glad you actually backed it up with some numbers and some direct comparisons, just in case anybody happens to be on the fence on that particular subject. Now, hopefully they're well and truly on our side. One thing I wanted to mention, just in case anybody is like firing up your angry email. I know Sylvester Stallone was nominated for the original Rocky as well, but you know, just throwing that out there, we're aware.
Was nominated, but I think that like the we don't need to get in that conversation, but I think that like, okay, you know, 35 years later for Coogler to have gotten him back to maybe what the best performance of his career by a lot of people's estimates would be is pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, is there anything you wanted to say about Revenge of the Sith performing as well as it did? I mean, number two at the box office, that's pretty good. I mean, it's a 20th anniversary. Like they're pegging that screening to the 20th anniversary. But is there anything you wanted to mention about that?
Quite a bit, actually. I think that so first off, yeah, like how many movies open to $25 million these days anyway? Not a lot. OK, so here's my biggest thing. Talk all we want about the numbers. You know, a little over $40 million globally to start. You know, this could easily be a $100 million re-release by the time it's over, which is crazy. The Phantom Menace re-release last year did pretty well. Not quite this well, but did well. The 3D re-release of the Phantom Menace from about 10, 12 years ago made over $100 million. Here's my thing. This was an event. My theater for this was packed. People were in Jedi robes, lightsabers. Hayden Christensen did a little intro for the movie, and people clapped when he came on screen. And mind you, I'm not at the Alamo Drafthouse. I'm just at a Cinemark down the road from my house. Okay, so here's what I will say. This number being one of the biggest re-releases ever for a movie, trailing only like the 1997 re-release of Star Wars A New Hope, fully completes the Star Wars prequel trilogy redemption tour. And I say this as someone who has had a complicated relationship with these movies, but I'm also a guy pushing 40. For people younger than me, this just is Star Wars to them. And I think one of the biggest things that needs to be said, and I will say this on every platform that will give me the chance, people such as myself and people older than me, people that don't like these movies, we need to stop writing about them and maybe even talking about them as though there's some black stain on the reputation of Star Wars. They are not. For the younger generation, that is a large part of the reason this franchise has any relevance whatsoever and why they care about it. It just isn't the case. These movies have been fully redeemed. You don't have to love them, but you cannot pretend as though there's some terrible thing that a few people like. You know, these are truly, truly heralded movies. And I would put out there that Revenge of the Sith at this point is probably one of the most beloved Star Wars movies overall. You know, I think that that's important to consider.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough for me to take that, you know, to swallow that because of the time period where I grew up and like the just the venom that was spit at those movies when they came out. But I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think that's something that people who care a lot more about Star Wars than I do are probably just going to have to make their peace with if they haven't already. I was wondering from a, I guess, a re-release standpoint. Okay, you mentioned Phantom Menace being re-released in 3D 10 years ago or whenever that was. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they finished the re-release of that whole trilogy at that time. Is that correct?
No, they didn't. They just ended up doing it. There were plans to do 3D conversions, I think, for Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. It didn't happen. It was kind of at that 3D craze post-Avatar.
Yeah.
And then that slowed down. Like, there was the Jurassic Park 3D re-release in 2013, which made a boatload of cash. But yeah, that slowed down.
I think Titanic there was a Titanic re-release in 2012, too.
Yeah, so that's
too,
the biggest re-release globally still, is the Titanic one, I believe. Okay. And then the 3D re-release of The Lion King from 2011, that had the second biggest opening for a theatrical re-release. The only slight caveat there is that because it was a 3D conversion, it like technically wasn't, you know, the original movie in a sense, right? Mm. Like the thing that I find interesting about Revenge of the Sith is the 1997 re-release of A New Hope came with the promise of all new footage, right? Okay, like we don't have to like those special editions, but at the time that was an exciting prospect to get people into theaters. The 2011 re-release of The Lion King, oh, it's in 3D. You can see it like you've never seen it before. What's interesting to me about this Revenge of the Sith thing is like, hey, this is just the movie you love 20 years later. There was no added value element. So that to me is what sticks out.
Yeah. And so I guess my question, I have two questions. Why do you think they didn't finish the 3D re-releases all those years ago if Phantom Menace made $100 million? Because I forgot that it performed that well. I just kind of assumed that when those movie, when Phantom Menace, the 3D version came out, it didn't do well enough to justify continuing. But it seems like $100 million is nothing to laugh at, right?
No, the 2012 3D re-release of The Phantom Menace did 102.7 million worldwide. Holy crap. That's a lot of money.
Like a strange decision to me to not just continue to tap that to its fullest extent, which sort of loops back around to the original question that I had for you. Is I was wondering if you think that like Disney could or should, question mark, I'm not sure where you fall in this, re-release the Star Wars movies just kind of perpetually in theaters? Like,
I think they like to keep them as special, like, because you don't want to run the risk of overexposure in that, right? Like, but I do think that like there's this idea that, you know, you have enough Star Wars movies now where significant anniversaries will start to just come up, you know, like pretty frequently. You know, where you can do, because like last year they did 25th for Phantom Menace, and then this year they did 20th for Revenge of the Sith. So like, I think you'll just start to get them periodically anyway. The other thing that just occurred to me, according to your question, can you think of anything else that happened important with Lucasfilm in 2012?
Yep, it was sold to Disney.
Yeah, Disney bought it, so that's probably why. And then also the 3D craze started to die out a little bit, and you know, the there was all of this like, what are we going to do, you know? So I imagine that's probably what happened.
Didn't think about that. That's a good point. Maybe it just didn't match up because
I forgot what year it was, and I looked up that stuff on Box Office Mojo and I was like, oh yeah, 2012, that was a big year for Star Wars. All I will say is this, like, I'm not the biggest prequel guy in the world. What happened to me is I loved them as a kid. You kind of get older and you're like, maybe these movies weren't great. And then what happens, Disney buys Lucasfilm and you realize there's going to be more Star Wars movies. And like, when the prequels were the last Star Wars I thought I was ever going to get, it was harder to look at them. And then I think like when you know that there's a lot of them and these are just part of it, you're able to sort of look at what the good of them is rather than just like being upset about what's not great about them. And that helped me. But then I think going to see Revenge of the Sith in that crowded theater and so many people just so hyped, like my biggest takeaway was like, man, seeing Star Wars in a theater is fun, you know, like just having that. So I think that it was me and a lot of other people had that thing. And I think that this is, if Disney was smart, they would, you know, some of these upcoming movies they have, they would probably look to do something in a prequel era if they could, could find a story worth telling in the prequel era. And I would point, perhaps on an unrelated note, to James Luceno's Darth Plagueis novel. Do what you will with that. But anyway, but yeah, so we can talk about something else, but I just think it's remarkable what happened with this movie.
Yeah, I was just kind of seeing how well Revenge of the Sith did just made me think, you know, Disney loves money. Why would they not just be, if not constantly re-releasing these movies, then like certainly like once every couple of years or something, just putting them back in theaters until audiences proved to them that that was a bad idea and they didn't turn out. But like,
right, but like even later this year,
free money.
Later this year, you could do a 10th anniversary re-release of Force Awakens. Later next year, you could do a 10th anniversary re-release of Rogue One. You know, so like you're getting to the point where you can start doing these. Like that's what I'm saying. Is like you can, depending on what anniversaries they want to classify as big enough to do these with. And what, in 2027, you got the 50th of A New Hope? Come on. I mean, it's going to, they're going to keep doing it.
So. Okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
So there are some news items that I wanted to talk to you about, Ryan. I'm not, we don't have to go super long on these, but I did want to mention the Hunger Games Sunrise on the Reaping, which is a new Hunger Games prequel book that is out in stores right now, has been announced to become a movie. I don't know if we've said that on the podcast yet. And it's in the casting process right now. I know that Jesse Plemons has been cast to play the young Plutarch Heavensby, who is the character that Philip Seymour Hoffman played in the movies, which is just great casting. I have an article up on the site about that. We have an article about the person that was cast to play young Haymitch Abernathy, who is the character who was played by Woody Harrelson in the films. There's another important character who's already been cast. I'm not a huge Hunger Games person, but I know those books are very, very popular still. So if anybody who's listening cares about that franchise a lot more than I do, definitely go to the links in the show notes and get more information about that if you don't already know. I wanted to just kind of pose the question to you, Ryan, in terms of like thinking about another Hunger Games prequel. You obviously probably are thinking about The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, which is the most recent Hunger Games movie. That was a prequel as well. So what are you thinking just in terms of like Lionsgate continuing to tap this franchise? And what do you think about like maybe the potential prospects of this film?
Well, I think it's smart. I think like Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, I think they made it for just under 100 million, if I'm not mistaken, or around 100. And then it made 340 worldwide, or 350 worldwide, 349. So rounded up 350. That's good. That's good. Hollywood will take those returns any day of the week. But my concern is this, like you kind of almost got away with one there, like financially speaking, like where that budget kind of was like, so you eked out some profit at the box office, VOD, it's going to be good, help boost the old Hunger Games movies. But let's say generally sequels are more expensive than what came before. So the somewhat brilliant thing they're doing here with another prequel with a different cast, new people, is that you don't necessarily have to pay people for like coming back for a sequel because it's different people. So you're just paying them once, whatever. But they're putting together a heck of a cast, and Francis Lawrence is probably going to want a lot of money to come back. And so my concern is this. Can you still do it for 100? Because if it becomes 150 and the audience is exactly the same or even less, then you're kind of in trouble. Mm. If or at the very least doesn't really work out very well. If you can keep it on, I would say, because you got to account for inflation, right? So like even call it 120. Okay, like that's probably good, but you have to, I think Lionsgate has got to be careful here because they always get in trouble with these, an over-investing thing. You know, we talk about Borderlands, we talk about all these movies, like, and they're coming off a rough year. So I think this is smart, but, and the cast is incredible. I mean, putting Jesse Plemons as a young Philip Seymour Hoffman, like that's good casting. And the reception to this book has been insane. Like fans love it. So good story to tell, worth doing. I just hope that the people at Lionsgate are like, all right, we have to be conscious of this. We can't depend on this being a $500 million movie. We have to look at what the last one did and budget accordingly. But, you know, I think it's a good way to continue the franchise. I think it's smart. I think these are obvious stories to tell. Like, that, it's not forcing the issue. Like, these are stories fans have wanted answers to for a while. So I think it's good. And they're not doing the Game of Thrones thing where you have to do the ending before it's written. Like, these are based on the author's books. Like, it's, you know, so it's smart. It's good business. It's just, I hope it continues to be good business and not one of those things where we're like, oh no, they spent $200 million on this. What now? You know, like that, yeah. You know, so it's just, it's smart until it isn't.
Gotcha. Okay. So I also wanted to mention that Kevin Smith has been out there doing some Q&As for Dogma, which is back in theaters. And we have some articles up on the site probably by the time you're listening to this, and maybe a couple more coming because Bill Bria attended some, I think, a Q&A with Kevin Smith out here in LA. And then Brad Oman attended one in Chicago and recorded some of what Kevin Smith was talking about. And so we've written up several of his quotes on the site. I just wanted to give you a minute to talk about your relationship to Dogma and what do you think about maybe a potential Dogma 2? That's something that he's been talking about for a little while.
I love Dogma. I think it's one of Kevin Smith's best movies. I think the bigger thing here is, and I think some of Brad's stories were great. You know, Kevin Smith's a long-witted guy, so even us reading any of his quotes would take half the episode. But I think more than anything, I think it's really cool that this weird private equity firm just went in and bought these movie rights from Weinstein and then just like welcomed Kevin in and were like, what do you want to do with Dogma? And he's like, I would take it out on tour and then I'd maybe make a sequel. And they're pretty much like, great, do whatever you want, you know, and they just basically want the movie out there to try to make money. And so they're allowing Kevin to do that. And I think that's really, really cool. You know, there is so many ways this could have gone worse for him, depending on who bought it or just never being able to wrestle the rights away. And I think it's really neat that's going on. As for Dogma 2, okay, he's talked about another Jay and Silent Bob movie. He's talked about Moose Jaws. He's talked about Tusk 2. He's talked about, and he's at various points been like, you know, and Mallrats 2 is still dangling out there somewhere. Like, so, and Red State 2 is another one I forgot. So, like, is Dogma 2 actually happening, or is this like one of those other sequels he's talked about where he's got a script done, but it doesn't actually come through? And like, I know that's a lot of that's not in his control. And it seems like these people that now own the rights to Dogma are very motivated to make something of it. But I that's my only question is like what actually gets made. But I would be interested to see where it goes if he does make it. But, you know, we'll see.
We have an article about the two major changes that would happen in the sequel if he is able to actually make that. So check that out in the show notes. A couple more news items to mention real quick before we wrap things up. Apple and Tom Hanks are teaming up for a sequel to Greyhound, which is an Apple original movie. I think it's a World War II story that came out in 2020, 2021, somewhere around there. I never saw the movie. It was called like Ultimate Dad Movie material by several people who saw it, but I heard it was like only okay, and now all these years later they're reteaming to make a sequel. So what do you think about that?
This sounds like the kind of thing that streamers were rushing to do in 2020, not in 2025. It's gonna be expensive. It's a weird move. I had the same thought, like when you and I were talking about the Clueless thing a little bit ago, where it's like that Clueless series feels like something that should be a movie now, but is like a series again, even though it's like a weird, it feels like an outdated idea. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, creatively, it sounds like that there could be a story to tell there, and Tom Hanks loves being in these kind of movies. Like he's, you know, that's great. I love Tom Hanks. I'll watch him read a phone book. I don't care. But like, for again, it's another one of those weird, like, it's a weird business thing to me where I'm just like, I don't really know. Like, does their data just suggest that, like, there is a just ridiculous amount of Greyhound fans out there that would watch another one? I don't know. But it's just seems like an odd move on paper. But, you know, what I don't, we're not privy to all this streaming data. So who knows what the numbers have told them?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that I was surprised to see this announcement happen before F1, which comes out, I think, in June, and that's an Apple movie that Warner Brothers is releasing. But that's one I feel like there's probably a lot riding on that, because we've talked about the budget of that movie being reported to be like somewhere in the $300 million range. So I would have expected Apple to kind of take a wait and see approach on how something like that does before they announce a potentially expensive Greyhound sequel. But here we are. So maybe that's actually a good sign that they're announcing this, because it could signal that F1 is not necessarily like a make or break thing for Apple Studios or Apple Original Films or whatever you want to call them to just continue making stuff. So, I mean, I love the fact that they're making stuff, even if we can't always wrap our heads around the financials of it and why exactly they're making the decisions that they're making. But I love that they're an option in 2025 Hollywood, which is increasingly dwindling in options for storytellers in terms of places to take.
I do agree
projects.
With that for sure. Like that, and it's the same thing with like Prime Video, which I didn't talk a lot about The Accountant too, but the fact that like that movie has a much bigger budget, but that's like a streaming inflated budget where it seems like everyone was paid out ahead of time, and then Amazon decided to give it theatrical after the fact is what it sort of seems like. You know, but like, they can bear the weight of that. They only care about it going to Prime Video. So it's nice to have those as options for sure.
Yeah. And then the last thing is another video game adaptation has been announced. This is for a video game called Split Fiction, which came out, I think, just last month and is
very
supposed
new.
To be one of the best video games of 2025 so far, according to people who have played it. Sydney Sweeney is going to be starring in and executive producing a movie version. Wicked director John M. Chu is going to be directing it, and Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who are the screenwriters of Deadpool and Wolverine, are going to be writing the script for this. Are you familiar with this game at all? I have not played it.
I'm familiar with it. I haven't played it. But like, man, oh man, did this come together fast. Okay, so let's look at this on paper. Okay, hugely acclaimed, best-selling video game. Like, probably going to be nominated for Game of the Year, that type of movie, that type of game, right? All right, so let's start there. John M. Chu coming off of Wicked and Wicked Part 2. Sydney Sweeney, perhaps the most, like, rising star I've encountered in my entire time doing this. Maybe, like, Jenna Ortega. Like, there's a few, but she is catapulted to superstardom. And then the guys who wrote Deadpool, like, I can you, the studio frothing at the mouth for this, like, this is crazy on paper. It also sounds very expensive, but like, you know, who doesn't bid for this?
Yeah. And like the, from what I understand about the game, it's kind of like it's called Split Fiction, and it's two characters who are kind of linked in some way. And one of them is taking place in a sci-fi storyline, and another one is taking place in a fantasy storyline. And they're hooked up to some like state-of-the-art simulation device and experiencing their stories and their individual realities. And then like glitches happen, and they have to kind of survive this otherworldly environment. And that sounds very, very expensive to me, but like kind of rad too. So,
but then the big question is like, who stars with her, right? Because like, you could make this such a good two-hander. Like maybe go get Glenn Powell. You know, like you just I mean, I think this is one of those ones that like on paper you go like, absolutely, you do this. Like even if it's $100 million movie, you probably give this a shot.
I'm looking at the image from the game right now, and it appears that there are two women as the lead protagonists. One's a blonde and one's a brunette. So, I mean, just on a pure surface level, Sydney Sweeney and Jenna Ortega, if you're talking about.
Yeah, that's like, the obvious one, right? Like that's the, or you get Zendaya in there. Like you make it a Euphoria reunion and. But it's easy to see the pitch. But I guess what this further sort of cements to me, what we're talking about a little bit before we started recording, is like in the aftermath of Sonic and Minecraft, and this is video games are Hollywood's next gold rush. Like this is for sure happening. And this is evidence of that. And the one of the reasons I actually like that is, for one, video game movies are not automatically crap anymore. You know, like, that's not... And also, like, comic book movies... So you had Marvel, you had DC. Those could only basically go to, like, two studios. That's it. They're also, like... Superhero movies are radically expensive to make because there's a certain type of story that kind of has to be told. And, you know, Deadpool being made for less than $60 million was a miracle, and that was a cheap one. We just talked about Until Dawn, which is a video game movie. It was made for $15 million. You know, you can make... Video games are not a one-size-fits-all thing. There's not just one studio for them. They can go anywhere. Any studio can bid on the rights to these, and you can make them of all different shapes and sizes. So I'm actually a big fan of the idea that if Hollywood starts taking these correctly and looking at what Minecraft did and clearly satisfying those fans and taking the source material seriously, like, you, this could actually be a really cool way to get a bunch of interesting blockbuster storytelling out there. You know, because, like, the video games are everything, really, right? Like, it's like you can have anything in a video game. So yeah, this could theoretically be a good thing for blockbuster filmmaking. It's not going to do anything for people that like to complain that Hollywood has no original ideas, but I don't know, like, I, as someone who really loved the Until Dawn movie, I'm okay with this. Like, I like, let's see what you got. Like, I'm into it. So
yeah,
I don't know. So that but that's what I think this signifies more than anything to me, is the power of Sydney Sweeney and the video game gold rush that is coming.
100%. All right, well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will link to a bunch of articles in the show notes. I encourage you, as always, to click on those. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. We'd really appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.